Hi, and welcome to the My Dog Made Me Do It Naturally podcast. I am your host, Kat Jepsen, a canine nutritionist with an innate obsession with dogs and the natural ways in which we are driven to live because of them. So, let's get to it. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the My Dog Made Me Do It Naturally podcast. As always, I am your host, Kat Jepsen, and today I am joined by Carol Hughes from Biome for Pets. Good morning, Carol.
Morning.
How are you doing this morning? Are you good?
I'm doing okay. The sun's out, so I always feel better when the sun's out. And we're here in North Wales, and it's really beautiful on the mountains, so feeling good, yeah.
Absolutely. Sunshine is definitely a game changer, isn't it, with just getting up and getting started for the day.
yeah, it is, yeah.
So Carol Hughes of Biome for Pets is one of the leading experts in the canine microbiome and has been involved in the canine microbiome since 2014, which started with research in the microbiome of overweight dogs. This research led to the discovery of a natural plant compound that worked to reduce weight in dogs and horses without changing the diet. Following this discovery, Carol then went on to do a gut microbiology degree course at Aberystwyth University. This course was run by some of the world's leading gut microbiologists and focused on the relationships between the bacteria and how the microbiome could be manipulated to improve health. From that learning, Carol and her team began to further define Biome for Pets to focus on how to manipulate and restore the microbiome and make it resilient using active plant compounds. This led into a further 4 years of research relating to inflammation of the microbiome, which still continues today, into discovering which bioactive plant compounds can modulate the microbiome's rebalancing and restoration process. Carol has been involved in this area of research with Bangor and Aberystwyth universities since 2009, has presented at the European College of Integrated Veterinary Nutrition, the British Association of Veterinary Herbalists, Kew Gardens, the Fine Bioactive Compounds from Plants conferences, and has spoke at the Natural Dog Expo last year and is speaking again this year. Wow, what a journey, Carol. How fascinating. Oh, how I would love to see inside that brain of yours and see what kind of discoveries you've made.
Yeah, I tend to look at the microbiome as an ecosystem because that is what it is. So it's a lot of gut bacteria, but it is in fact an ecosystem, and an ecosystem thrives or exists to benefit each of its members and create a healthy environment to provide benefits either to the environment around it, which in the case of the dog is obviously his health, the health of the host. But the whole point of a community of gut bacteria are that they do get on and they do work together, which I love about an ecosystem. If you leave it alone and let it thrive, it has this self-regulating mechanism that will continue on to benefit whatever's around it. And I think if you look into nature, I think the Great Barrier Reef is a favourite example of mine. It's so fragile. You know, the balance is so fragile, but there is a balance. But if it's upset by man's intervention, usually, it has a mechanism to kind of survive small changes, and small changes do occur over periods of time. But if you then have a massive input of something it's not designed to do, such as agrochemicals, it destroys that fine balance. And all the time then, you're having to look at a system that isn't balanced and isn't regulating itself. And that's very much like the microbiome. So I'm a total fan of trying to rebalance it, restore it, and make it resilient. But we're up against some pretty hard pressures from the outside, from diet, from food, from medication. So I think when I first started with the microbiome of dogs, it was ever so obvious in the beginning that the dog is in crisis. Possibly the human is as well, but I haven't done so much work on the human. But compared to horses and ruminants, exotics and everything, elephants even, that we've studied, the dog is certainly in a crisis, yeah. Which is why I think I love to do it, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny because it kind of, when you put it that way, which, you know, that is a fantastic way to explain the microbiome, you know, it's better than just saying, you know, it's a boatload of bacteria. But when you say the dog is in crisis, it sort of becomes obvious that, you know, this is more than likely due to the fact that they live so closely with us. Yeah. Isn't it? I think so, because they're out of all of the animals, they are the ones that are literally side by side with us, like, all of the time. So in terms of the health of the dog, what is the microbiome needed for to keep the dog healthy? Like, what do they do?
Well, they do everything, don't they? That's the problem, I think. I think trying to sort of explain, I get lots of people that go, well, I feed a dog an 80-10-10, which I diet, and I'm not sure I really know what that means. But if your dog hasn't got the bacteria to digest that food, it doesn't matter the ratios that you put in, it won't work. So you have to consider what you've got in there before you can make a diet work anyway. And the diet is very much immune system. That's one of its really strong points. It does regulate the immune system. I think we're seeing a lot of conditions like itching, sort of biting paws, sore paws. I don't know what you call it, but we get a lot of people describing that. And that's related to the immune function that starts in the microbiome, and behavior, anxiety, reactivity. The gut brain axis of the dog is incredibly strong, as is that need to scavenge, or I don't know what words you call it now, but I'm thinking of a kind of fairly wild street dog. They go out and find food, and that's really governed by the gut bacteria that tell the dog what to eat to survive, depending on what's going on in the microbiome. So it's a very strong driver for health, for sure. And digesting food is only half of it. You know, that it has such strong communications to other parts of the body that you can't ignore, really.
Yeah, wow, that's fascinating. So one thing, did you always want to end up studying the canine microbiome, or was that
No, I was really disappointed. At the time, I was really disappointed because we were researching this plant compound and weight loss. And we were doing it with a vet college. And they said, well, the next stage, if you want to do this in dogs, is you've got to put dogs in cages. And I kind of thought, I don't think I can put dogs in cages. I can't put dogs in cages. So I was disappointed because that seemed like the end of the journey for the research. And then we met with the team at Aberystwyth, and they said, well, no, you don't have to put them in cages. We will look at what it does to the microbes in the microbiome. Well, in 2014, there wasn't a lot known about that. So I kind of thought, well, you're probably a bit bonkers, really. I'm not sure what that's about. But to be fair, that initial study we did, the results were so astounding. It was, you know, it was just designed for me to follow the route of looking at the microbiome, because the results were stunning. The dog does respond really well. If you get it right, the gut microbes do respond, and the dogs were losing weight without us proving that you had to get this compound over the gut wall and into the system, which would have meant dogs in cages. So we kind of found a way around it, really. But at that time, we had a fridge or a freeze dryer, a van, and we used to go around and kind of do the collections ourselves. So that was very odd, very odd. It was a very odd thing to get into.
Yeah. I bet it was one of those things where people ask you what you were doing, and you told them, they're like, really? Yes.
Yeah, they did. They really did. But it was, I suppose, it's so fascinating. And the dog was so, felt so sorry for the state of it. Don't know. It was, I suppose I've got my own dogs, and it was just a natural progression, I think. So we left the ruminants and the horses. I think ruminants and horses, at least they can access food that's outside. They can go and, you know, rummage around and find their own food to an extent if you've got a good environment for them. But
yeah,
with dogs, they can't do that as much. Or, you know, if they do go and scavenge stuff, they get into trouble for...
They do get into trouble, yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, it's a bit sad, really.
Oh, but it's exciting because obviously with all your amazing research, now we can find ways to help support them at home and empower pet parents to kind of make better choices as well. So we know that the microbiome is made up of trillions of bacteria. Is that accurate? Would you say trillions? So in a healthy dog, how many different kind of strains or types of bacteria would you expect to see? And, you know, like, what are they? Are they good? Are they bad? Are they ugly?
Yeah. Well, you would see some dogs have maybe 400 species. Some dogs can have 8, 9, 1,000 species. But it's what those species are that's actually probably as important. If you look at a dog, for instance, a dog with that's had Giardia or Giardia, however you say it, it will have an extra family of bacteria that goes with that condition, and an extra two families actually. One are sort of pathogens that translocate across the gut wall, and another gang digests fiber rapidly and make sugar, so they make the microbiome a bit more acidic. So the diversity score then would go up high, and the amount of species would go higher because of that. But they're not good species. So it isn't that you want lots of species means the microbiome is working and it's good. Mm. You just need the right species, the ones that support immune function, support mental health in the dog, and gut wall integrity, and will digest food. They're more important, really, than the number of species or what they are individually. You've got to have a sort of gang effort to digest food as the main 24 species. And then after that, you know, you'll get bacteria that come in from the environment, and they're important too. But it's not a matter of just having lots more species equals health. It's not as simple as that.
So would you say it's important to still have some of those bad guys in there?
Yeah. I love the bad guys.
Yeah.
I think because we've been doing it since 2014, when we first started, it was always things like Campylobacter, you know, vets sort of, oh yeah, great Campylobacter. I know that bacteria. I know it's a bad bacteria. E. coli, E. shigella, also of all the bad pathogens you could find in there. So we even had a part of the report for vets to show the percentage of those bacteria. But then after COVID, they all disappeared. I mean, it's really unusual to get an overgrowth of Campylobacter. We might see one in 500 dogs with that.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's so unusual compared to what it was. So infections, bacteria that cause infections, are just not so common now as they were. So a dog will have other things that go wrong rather than have a gastric infection. And we have an actual scale. We have a scale that measures that, and infections really low to what they used to be.
So it's more to do with the fact that, so now the infections have gone, it's now the immune system that suffers, and obviously the digestion of food, so then that obviously impacts absorption of nutrients and everything like that. So it's so really the dogs were in better health when they had these more infections than what they do with the chronic long-term illnesses. So fascinating, isn't it? So that's
I'm trying to get those trying to get those back is quite hard now, because we've come along to another crisis point. I suppose we're 4 years on. We saw the microbiome change during that lockdown year. It's never really gone back, and it's actually moving towards the bacteria that were took over in that year after COVID. They're growing and taking over the microbiome in quite significant amounts. So I don't know where that's going, because it's an ecosystem, so it's trying to self-right itself. But at the moment, it's not working very well, because we've lost the pathogenic bacteria that would bring it back. Having said that, dogs that are fed raw, there is a bacteria that is found in wolves that are properly wild, not wolves that are sort of, you know, have been involved in humans. So if they're really wild, they have a bacteria that stands up against these ones that have come in at the moment following COVID, and they are sort of acting as police and acting to reduce them in the microbiome. So that's an interesting aspect for us to follow, but they are only found in dogs fed raw and not in great amounts at the moment, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
All right, so that would be sort of like an adaptation that the wild wolf has, who is free from kind of like human influence, which is, you know, gonna hopefully help to restore health in our pets. So obviously that's quite a significant change then, isn't it, in the past few years since COVID, and something happened to do with the bacterias, and we've got these new ones taking over. So is it more common now that you, when you do these kind of microbiome analysis on dogs, that you do tend to have more dogs that have got problems than dogs that are okay? You know, like has a microbiome changed on a general scale for all dogs? Is that what you found?
That's sad, isn't it?
So
it is really.
Yeah.
Dogs that are fed raw are definitely better. Or lightly cooked.
Because so fresh food.
I think fresh food. Yeah. I think it's the blood in the fresh meat that is actually feeding the bacteria that are resistant against the ones we got during COVID.
That's interesting, isn't it? That's interesting. Yeah. Okay. Which is another reason why, you know, if you defrost the food, then don't throw away the juices that seep out of it. Is that where you'd find it in there? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The myoglobin. So are you finding now that dogs still have 400 species or like 800 species, and that it's just the populations are smaller, or have you seen like a reduce in the number of species in general?
Yeah, you were definitely seeing a reduction. You kind of want something in the middle, maybe five. I know it said that there are 700 species, and we would have found that back in 2018. But I think 450 species is, you're probably doing well if you've got that in the microbiome now. So that's a drop. I did notice in this last batch that's just come in, the diversity seemed to have increased. So I'm watching for a trend now. I'm hoping going forward through this year, for whatever reason, we've kind of got over a hurdle. You know, we've stopped going into decline and something's happening. But I'm wondering if it's because the diets of the dogs have changed, I would say, in the last 2-3 years or year, would you say? I mean, there's more good feed companies now and a move away from kibble, let's say, and a lot of supplements, a lot of good companies making good supplements.
Yeah, so there has been lots of changes in recent years in the fresh and natural feeding movement, and especially since kind of more people are talking about the microbiome and the effect of it, then more people are more conscious about helping and preserving the bacteria. I mean, we've still got a long way to go.
Agreed.
With obviously even developing the research and even just getting the diets changed and making changes in the home. But in recent years, there have been many more people jumping on the fresh feeding bandwagon, let's call it. I often help dogs who have these gut issues or microbiome imbalances or, you know, kind of severely depleted populations. And even missing some of the key families, as you called them, completely just missing them.
Gone.
And they're the ones that they need for health. So can you explain what sort of things can disrupt the microbiome? Is it just kind of like the new strains of bacteria that we've seen since COVID, or can it be other things like drugs, antibiotics, chemical cleaners, or can it even be like stress as well?
Well, I think if you go back to your ecosystem, the Great Barrier Reef, or even you know, an English river that used to have fish and used to have a great diversity on the riverbanks. It's an ecosystem. It sort of helps itself to survive. But if you put it under pressure, if you change things, say if you dig up the riverbank or you put agrochemicals, a factory moves in up the road and puts agrochemicals into it, they're all stressors that change the purity, the balance and the self-regulating mechanisms that go on within any ecosystem, wherever it is in the world, because it is incredibly able to survive and thrive. And when you think that the microbiome keeps the dog alive, it has a vested interest in survival and health, because that's how it goes on. When you put it under pressure and you change it, it will decline and degrade. So you're looking at a declining, degrading microbiome every time you expose it to chemicals, you know, medication, vaccination, stress, and food, poor food, lack of variety in food, not being able to go outside and sort of dig up the garden, let's say, or bones even. I mean, I think there was a time after COVID where all the microbes that digest bones went for, you know, because they were sensitive to the use of antibiotics. Well, I think clearly there were probably a lot more antibiotics being put into the environment, because sadly that's what happens. They come in from the environment and you ended up losing that gang of bacteria. So because of all these pressures, you are looking at a degraded system. So it doesn't matter. Well, it does matter. Better food is better, because you'll have to get into more microbes. But you have to take the pressure off it before anything. That's the most important thing, is to take the pressure off it. Or control what goes in.
So kind of like look at the environmental factors first, because it's kind of like, that's fascinating. Yeah.
I mean, we do now with autism, it's probably got a new word, but an autistic person will pass on microbes to a dog that don't belong there, and they live in the same place as the bad bacteria that we've lost, the Campylobacter, the E. coli, and they take over that space and they cause lots of problems for a dog. But from the human, we didn't see it. 2014, that was quite very unusual. So there's clearly been an increase in that bacteria in the human, and now we see the same in the dog. So you've got to do the dog together.
so really what could be happening, well, I don't know, this might be wrong, but now the Campylobacter and everything have gone, the space is open
for
the types of bacteria to kind of say, oh, we're going to move in here because there's space for us. And that's where they're causing the problems. Wow, that is so fascinating.
I mean, it's sort of like a city with a gang of robbers, and that, you know, one gang moves out and the worst gang turns up and takes over the 10 times.
It's so sad, isn't it? It's so sad. So sometimes obviously dogs can have kind of like gut issues and imbalances and things going on with the microbiome, and they might not display many kind of symptoms, or, you know, what we might not even link as being a symptom of kind of having an imbalance. So what in your experience could be a sign of a microbiome imbalance, including kind of like the more subtle signs that might go unnoticed?
I think definitely the licking of the biting and licking paws tends to be linked to antibiotic resistant bacteria. I think ear infections, they're linked because the gut is linked through mucous membranes to all the other microbiomes around the body. So that's another one. There are so many. I think behavior, anxiety, reactivity. You know, I think if you're going to the vet and getting regular medication, it's very likely, whether you can see much happening or not, you have got a gut imbalance. And I think, okay, if you're getting away with it now and you haven't got much, you don't see very much, later on, if you don't address it, you will have a dog that doesn't live as long, because its immune system has broken down and you've overwhelmed the thing that keeps it alive, which is the microbiome.
And it's this whole thing as well where people are just so scared of bacteria that they become obsessed with eradicating it and they're cleaning meticulously, you know, whereas what they don't realize is that if we didn't have bacteria, we wouldn't be able to survive, would we? We would literally, like we can see with the dogs, we would literally fall apart at the seams.
And I think in this day of technology, with the genomic technology is so amazing, what it can tell you. When I've just had some people, they go to the vet and they have a test for Clostridium perfringens, which is a bacteria that causes diarrhea, and they've used PCR to detect it, but it's in every dog anyway. And if they're detecting at 0.01% and they go, well, you've got Clostridium perfringens, that doesn't actually mean it's relevant to why the dog's got diarrhea. So he may have diarrhea because there's something else going on that is completely missed by that PCR test. So then the dog gets loads of antibiotics for no reason at all. And then you wipe out the one thing that actually primes the immune system. It's just really odd to me. Doesn't have to do it at all.
I think, to be fair though, the conventional space they've got a lot of catching up to do with in terms of happening with the research with the microbiome though, haven't they? And I think the overprescription of antibiotics has been a problem for a long time with people, obviously, and with dogs. So it's not just them. But I know I've had dogs that have come into my care who have had like more than 10 rounds of antibiotics consecutively. And it's like, you know, you just can't imagine what that has done to their microbiome with that dog. You know, it's just because, like you say, if these negative species are, you know, supposed to be there at 0.01% and they're doing a job at that level, then we're trying to eradicate them with antibiotics. Then if they keep coming back with a positive test, then that's when they're going to prescribe more antibiotics because they're seeing it as the problem hasn't gone. But really, it's another
gang of bacteria that cause inflammation that's causing the problem.
Wow, so many windows of opportunity for change though, isn't there, with knowing this information.
I mean, it's amazing when you talk to a vet and you talk bacteria, they only see getting rid of the bad bacteria. They do not see any benefit, and I think it's the same in humans too. There's no benefit to a bad bacteria, and that's such a, you cannot eradicate them all, and if you do, you're really in trouble.
Because then you will get something worse coming along. I'm ready for you now.
Something more linked to chronic disease rather than, as the bad bacteria used to cause infections, so they had to flare up and cause maybe diarrhea or something that you could see the dog was in discomfort for. Now it's this invisible kind of seeping in, they translocate, they go across the gut wall, they cause problems in other areas. It's a different type of bacteria.
It's fascinating, isn't it? So what, in your time as a microbiome analyst and through all of your research, what is the strangest thing that you've come across in your research, if you could pick one?
A few. I mean, I must come across strange things. I get at least one in 50 that I haven't got a clue where they've got this bacteria from. I think we had one recently, it was a rescue, came in from I think one of the Eastern European countries, and it had a bacteria that rats have, but it's a very, and it had taken over because there was nothing to stop it, because as soon as the dog moves out of that environment, comes here and gets a change in diet that may then feed that bacteria, it had just taken over, and the dog had lots of kind of symptoms around that. And in the end, we did do, because we quite like the natural plant compounds, because they contain very strong antimicrobials, like novel antimicrobials. So the bacteria don't like that. If they come across an antimicrobial from a plant that's novel and they've never seen, which I think is fantastic, it will get rid of them. So I think in the end that did happen, but that was I think that's quite scary to me, because you don't know what that bacteria does. You know, it belongs to a rat, but you haven't got a clue because you haven't seen it before in a dog. So you've got to work out what that bacteria is making, what toxins it's making, how will that affect the dog, and what will you do about it, really?
In rats and stuff as well, you get well, this is not in terms of bacteria, but you do get kind of like parasites in rats that can make them kind of go in self-destruct mode and look for kind of like cats to get killed so the parasites can then take over cats, and you know what I mean, it's that kind of situation. So I know it's different parasites to bacteria, obviously, because they are that powerful and they can, you know, have influence on the behavior. If it hasn't been studied before, then that is definitely a scary thing to think about.
But I think dogs from Eastern Europe and actually Australia, I'm not sure why Australia, because we do quite a lot with Australia, they have more of the bad bacteria that we used to see before COVID. And I'm wondering with Australia, they're very careful on biosecurity, aren't they?
Yeah.
I don't know if they use more antibiotics then. I think there are probably more empty spaces for ecosystems of bacteria to survive in other parts of the environment, and I think the dogs benefited from that because they're definitely better off than we are at the moment.
Wow. Yeah,
America is worse. If you get that, when you get them in from America, it's really, really bad.
I think that's sort of parallel to the state of human health over there though, isn't it? Especially with the food and everything going on, which is going to change, I think, now. But okay, so what's the most fascinating thing, or is that kind of like same as the strangest? You know, is
there a difference? Well, I think what fascinates me, and I haven't got to the bottom of it, is how the microbiome reacts if the condition the dog has got may be terminal. So say something like cancer, and it's the same with horses. Horses do the same. So it's almost like the microbiome goes, crikey, this is, we need to survive this, and we need our host to survive this. So you get a gang of bacteria called actinobacteria that are in the soil mostly, but they're usually present in the microbiome, possibly about 1%. Mm-hmm. They suddenly start increasing and making all these amazing compounds that are like steroids. They make steroids and they make a type of antibiotic as well. And there's two groups that increase together. And if you can manipulate that and feed the actinobacteria, the dog does survive a lot of stuff that it probably wouldn't survive if you didn't know that you needed to help that bacteria to survive. And it's almost like you want to say to a vet, just, do you not understand? The body is trying to survive. You know, if you can just get your head around that and help that microbiome to help the host survive, you've really got a strong chance of surviving.
Yeah. Wow. That is fascinating, isn't it? So,
but the horse has got one that is pure steroid. And I think it's because the horse mustn't fall down. You know, if a horse goes down, it's gone, hasn't it? I mean, in the wild, it would be. Mm-hmm. So this steroid, it's the same one that you find in a thoroughbred racehorse. So it's linked to speed, metabolism, and it is a steroid as well, and mental sharpness. So that increases, I mean, it goes up to maybe 15% in a horse to try and keep that horse on its feet and moving, you know, and stimulating it. It's quite amazing.
That is so amazing. That's all like that. This is like groundbreaking stuff, though, isn't it? You know what I mean? This could change the way that we can ultimately prolong or even improve the prognosis of pets that receive these kind of illnesses. So these particular types of bacteria that are responsible for creating all of these wonderful things in terminal illness, are you finding that these are disappearing in the general population of the dog's microbiome?
It's a funny one, because it's like you need the switch, that there must be a primeval or something I don't know that is a switch for that to happen, because they're there, but I don't know what makes them increase. I don't know what the signals are that say, right, come on guys, we need to bring out the heavy hitters here. We need this animal to survive better, and I don't know what that trigger is, because it's only when the dog is under threat of death that they do that.
Oh god, that's fascinating, isn't it? So obviously your work is all about plant compounds, isn't it?
Yeah.
So obviously probiotics have become the latest craze, with there are some pretty funky options available on the market, some good, some bad, as with everything. So how do you feel about probiotic supplements and prebiotic supplements, and would you normally advise pet parents to use them, Or would you normally, like, first advise to change up the diet with plant food options instead?
Yeah, I definitely go that. I think I can't make my mind up about probiotics. There are a couple that I quite like, but they have to suit the dog because they're quite strong. They have to suit the dog, and the dog's very sensitive.
Yeah.
I don't like a lot of products on the market that I can't work out what it is they're putting in because there isn't enough detail. I sort of feel that a lot of manufacturers, and I may be wrong, just go out and buy something that they're told will be okay, a particular strain, but I have to look into what that strain is and how that will affect the microbiome. And very often I can't find that strain ever in a dog. So that makes me ask the question, well, what good is that? But I'm not saying there isn't any good, but I just can't follow it through. So therefore I'd prefer to do something that I can see working, which is definitely plant compounds, get rid of the bad bacteria, encourage feed, and change the top 24 species. So you make room for the good gut bacteria to come back. I'd rather do that, really.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting. So functional medicine approaches, the term kind of like leaky gut, which is obviously intertwined with problems with the microbiome and the immune system. So we approach that with a 4R approach, which is remove, replace, reinoculate, and repair. So the reinoculate section of this approach is to reinoculate the microbiome, which is either usually done with kind of like probiotics or fecal microbiota transplant. So if you were kind of adopting that approach, then you, from a plant bioactive compound kind of standpoint, this would involve adding foods that would remove the bad bacteria. And then would you have a separate set of foods to kind of input that would promote the growth of the friendly bacteria? So are there two different foods that would achieve that kind of outcome?
Yeah.
And then that itself would re-inoculate the microbiome without having to use the others. Okay.
Yeah. It's what you've got at the top. For a microbiome to work, even if you've got 500 species, you only need the top 24 species to be above 1%.
Yeah.
So all the underneath that, they're all important, but they're not as important as that top set. So if you've got the number one species is present at, say, 70% of the microbiome, that doesn't leave room for any of the ones below that to be of any importance. So you have to remove that top. You have to kill it off somehow, reduce it somehow, which is really good. You introduce a novel plant antimicrobial that will kill it off. So you have to do that first, and then you have to feed the other good gut bacteria or other bacteria in general to bring them back up to take the place of the ones that you've got rid of. And that's as easy as that, really.
Yeah. And I'm not you make it sound so simple.
My point is incredibly logic. It's a very because it's trying to help itself at the same time. So if you just trigger a few things, back to what we used to do with ruminants, it does respond very well as long as you know what you're doing with it.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Okay, so the microbiome, it's so fascinating. There are so many different avenues to explore. And now emerging research is discussing the use of FMT, which we briefly just mentioned, fecal microbiota transplant in dogs, with case studies in dogs reporting that use of FMT has proven beneficial for many different health issues like the behavioural problems and itching and dogs with IBD and stuff like that. So what is your stance on the use of FMT therapy? Would that be something that you would recommend to those who have access to high quality donors, or would you still kind of stand with the plant compound?
No, I think because we're working on fecal matter transplants, but I think because we know a lot about the problems, it's not good enough to take a general stand back view and go, well, here's a donor, right, give it to everyone, because it doesn't really work if you can't match the donor and recipient, because some of these problems are important. They're important health issues. So with the technology we've got, why not match a donor very clearly to a recipient, and then you'll get a much better effect. We have got one donor dog, so you can see how unusual it is, Because for me, the microbiome has to be really very resilient, and it mustn't, it's got to be able to dodge the punches, if you like. It's got to be resilient enough that if it goes into a dog that's very stressed or has a history of chemicals or whatever, it has to overcome that. So that's a very special microbiome. And I think there are manufacturers of the oral kind of transplant that haven't considered that much, but people are taking it because they're desperate for a result.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to get the result taking that approach because it's too general for the problems.
Too general. Yeah. It's like a one size fits all approach rather than a tailored to an individualized care sort of thing.
Yeah.
So the problem is, though, I bet it's hard for you to find so many donors with the state of the crisis as it is at the moment.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I think we've got a trial that we're doing with Caroline Griffith, where we're going to find calm dogs that went through the COVID with calm owners and didn't have any medication kind of thing, and live in sort of fairly isolated places so they wouldn't have come in contact. And we're going to try and find donors that we can use to lower the bacteria that are related to anxiety, which came in during the COVID sort of era. But I have to say the spooky thing to that is that when people got COVID, the bacteria that the dogs now have post COVID, that don't make them have COVID, they haven't got COVID, but change their temperaments in some way, it was linked to people that had really bad COVID, and the bacteria seemed to amplify the virus. I think that's what the researchers are saying.
I see.
When you got COVID, you didn't just get COVID, you got a secondary bacteria kind of amplifier with it. And it's that that we're, I don't know what words to use. It's that what we're seeing now is the residue of that. And I know at the time we did alert the vet community, and we did do a vet trial, and it was clear that the microbiome had changed and it had changed that way, but we just didn't know until the research was coming out later what was happening, really.
Wow. Yeah, so there's been some big changes, hasn't there? And a lot of work to go.
Yes, a lot of work to go. And I think for people, when they're feeding a good diet, I really feel for them, because they say, well, I'm feeding this really good diet, but the problem is the microbiome can't digest that diet. So it's not your fault. It's just where we're at the moment in space and time, and it needs just to be changed a bit. But
general advice is something that isn't always, going to be applicable to dogs, especially if they've got really complex issues. But if people are at home and they're wanting to try and support their dog's microbiome, and if their dog seems kind of like otherwise healthy, what kind of foods do you think that they would need to kind of include in the diet? Or would it be a case that, you advise that pet parents have their dog's microbiome tested so that they can further individualize that diet?
Well, obviously I always like to know what's going on, because you're always surprised. I mean, I know from looking at this stuff, you kind of think, oh my gosh, where did you get that from? And then you have to have special help for that dog. But I think fresh food of any kind, let them scavenge. I've got great soil because we test the soil as well. Mm-hmm. And I like it when my dogs bury things and dig up things and come gardening with me. I think that's really good for them. Yeah. I like to eat the soil going around, because of the hill. We've got horses, we don't worm. So I like lots of interaction with the environment. Try to do that and try to let them tell you what they want to eat. Because we, when you're giving dogs plant material, you want to make sure they actually want it. So in some dogs, you may not get that response because they haven't got enough bacteria, but self-selection is also important.
Yeah, which is obviously if your dog goes out and they're eating grass and are eating soil and chewing on sticks and stuff, then pay attention to that. And rather than kind of see it as an inconvenience or a naughty behavior, which is obviously because humans don't do it so much these days anyway, then kind of like use it as a tool in your kit to build up a profile about what your dog's actually telling you. Yeah, definitely. I think we do need to pay more attention to our dogs in general, and also just kind of consider the fact that when they do live in the wild, they've come from a place where they have all this access to the soil, to, you know, fresh water, to other animals, to poop if they want to eat the poop, you know, they sometimes do. And then we've kind of like picked them up, put them in our life where they have restrictions in every single kind of way, which obviously then causes other kinds of stresses as well. So it's probably a good way to go is kind of like just let them be a dog for a bit as well.
And I mean, I do get it that I again, if you talk to some vets, they're appalled by that. I mean, the bone thing is appalling. Whereas I've got a terrier, and she loves to bury a bone and have it really disgusting and smelly and dig it back up. And that's okay. Do you know, that is okay? But it may not be okay if you've had a dog in the city that's bred in a city, hasn't got that microbiome to start with. So I'm not saying it's right for everyone, but I would probably want to end up with a microbiome that was resilient enough to cope with when they do that kind of thing. I think that's where the end goal is, to make a more resilient microbiome.
More resilient, yeah, to help them build it up naturally rather than trying to kind of just change it all. So theoretically, if you've got a dog that can't digest the bone and for example, then would you be able to achieve developing the ability to digest that bone? Would it be a case of going in with the plant compounds, or would you have to start by feeding kind of like small amounts of bone? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think a bit of both. I might actually go for the fecal matter transplant from a dog that has got proper bone digesting bacteria.
Bone digesting bacteria, yeah.
We have seen that after 2 months of fecal matter transplant from a good donor, 30% of the bacteria do set up home in the donor, in the recipient. So you are getting a significant repopulation. So it's just a matter of time and patience, really.
Yeah. Again, coming back to individualizing the diet and seeing what the dog individually needs.
Yeah.
So microbiome testing should be kind of like a key factor in how you assess, you know, your dog's diet.
Even I think when you look at all the other tests you do, if you do a test for allergies, okay, so you know what the allergies are, but what do you do about it? Whereas with the microbiome test, it will tell you what an allergy, you've got an allergy, but it'll also tell you how to fix it. So,
well, yeah, because a lot of the allergies that we see are because of these problems with the microbiome and the immune system, aren't they? Like, it's not so much an allergic response because the dog's allergic to that food. It's because the immune system is struggling and cannot cope with that, you know, protein being present, for example, which obviously you help the microbiome, then the allergies, or so we say, allergies disappear as well, which then obviously your dog can eat loads of stuff.
And also then it tells you, it's a great measure for you to understand where your dog is in space and time with his own health, doesn't it? You know, because it's so far reaching into to all the dog's health. It's a really good one to have. So you're not focusing on, I guess, one little thing. You're looking at the bigger picture, which is always a good idea, I think.
Absolutely. It's one of the most, you know, it's the most fundamental thing you can do when looking at your dog's care, just in general. Like, I mean, I, with all of the pet parents that I help, usually they come to me because they want to focus on their dog's diet and nutrition. But I mean, I always try to explain that you have to look at everything else that's happening in their life as well, such as, you know, their environment, what they're exposed to inside and out of the home, how much choice they have, what's their mental health like, because all of this, and even though they're all intertwined and you can formulate a plan which helps them all, you still kind of have to look at everything to see what's really going on, because diarrhea as well, for example, is only just one symptom. And like you said earlier with the example of giardia or giardia, however you want to say it, I never know how to say that either. No, it's just one of those things.
I just say it both ways to please everyone.
It could be that, you know, that might show up on a test that, you know, you could relate that to being an issue of the diarrhea, but it could be something, you know, it could be stress related, or it could be that they've had a chemical flea and wormer in the past, you know, in recent weeks or whatever. So no, absolutely. So you've briefly talked about fecal microbiota transplant. So obviously there's kind of things already happening in Biome for Pets about FMT products, and you've began matching, you know, dogs up with donors. So is there kind of like an official plan for Biome for Pets to release an FMT? And will it be kind of like sort of like a personalized where you'll have a test and then you'll be matched up with a donor, so people won't just be able to kind of like go online and buy it, it'll be like a service that you provide.
I think that's the way, that's the best way to do it, and that's the way of integrity. I think I'd rather help all dogs than just a percentage, and I think if you've got a general product, you're only going to help a percentage, and that's fine if that's what you want to do, but because we've got the testing in the database, it just seems that you can make better use of it by doing it that way. I think with the behaviour and the Prevotella, I hope that we'll have a general product, because that's, you know, if you can just do that one job, I think that's fair enough. So there'll be two things going. And then eventually we'll probably have one for vets, because I think vets are becoming more interested. But they want to do it in a more invasive way. So, we will end up going into it all. It's just, kicking it off.
Well, absolutely, because that's the main thing, isn't it? Like, you want to make sure that the dogs that are receiving these kind of donors are going to actually benefit from it, rather than just more money down the drain, because these pet parents have already spent a lot of money on trying to fix their problem. So, you know, they want the reassurance that it's going to be beneficial. So do you think that's going to be soon? Is that going to be soon?
Well, we have got the dogs, the calm dogs. I've just got to send out kits. I think we're getting Christmas through. So I think there'll be something trickling along, you know, that just some sort of grassroots thing where people go, yes, I've got this great poo, I'm going to dry it and then send it to you. We're already actually doing that. But turning it into a business, which I think it deserves to be, may not happen until we've got enough information about what's happening. Because I think the thing is with it, you have to get the parent to actually look at what the problem is, and I think a lot of them are looking, they've got a lot of buzzwords, but they're not actually addressing what the problem is. And we have to just focus on taking people that understand the microbiome as well, that we can then work with to do the transplants and get them to think differently. I think that's it. I think it's very much there are a lot of buzzwords out there and a lot of trends, and it's trying to get them to just look, you have to trust this microbiome. It's there for a reason. It's there to make your dog better, and don't keep looking elsewhere. Just focus on this for a bit. So
absolutely. So in terms of the testing, so because obviously there are quite a few different microbiome tests on the market at the moment, so do they all kind of test for the same thing?
I think it's a minefield.
It's a bit like
the Wild West, I have to say. It's sort of like, I think there's obviously going to be money in it at some point. And I think everybody's just gone, oh, we've got to do this. And it's very difficult to get an accurate result from a fecal sample. It's really difficult, and we use a lab. It's not the quickest, but it is the best. We've tried labs in is it Cambridge have really gone mad on it, genomic sequencing. I think, you know, the government are obviously throwing money at it as well, so you've got loads of people that have come in, and you'll get a quick turnaround. They don't actually care what the results are, because there's no measure for what the results should be. There's not much quality control. But we use a research lab, so they have to have quality control. And everything has to be absolutely top quality, because that's what they're invested in that process. So the results we get don't often match the other results from other companies, because they're not doing it in the same way, and we've done the same thing since 2014. We've got the same lab staff, we've got the same researchers, we've got the same microbiologists, and we've all just got better at what we do, and we're consistently producing a consistent result, and we've got a massive database. So I think you've got to have that. You know, if you're just coming into it, you haven't got a core kind of microbiome to look back to. How do you know what, how do you know how to read it even?
Yeah, I agree.
It's difficult.
It's difficult. And the thing is as well, though, it happens with everything, doesn't it? Just like with dog food, like with supplements, wherever, you know, somebody makes a fascinating discovery, which is going to change the way which we can help to support our pets. And then people realize there's money in it and they want a piece of the pie. So it's just being mindful in, you know, kind of like do your research into where you're getting these tests from. It's the same with the allergy tests and things. Like, people pay money online for these allergy tests and, you know, half of them are just, you know, so unreliable.
Unreliable.
So we just gotta, you know, be mindful in who is running the tests, the facilities they use and stuff like that. Just, you know, make an informed decision, as with anything, if you're going for these. But all of your tests as well, pet parents do get a free consultation with the tests, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
So they can have the results explained.
At the moment, I'm just having 4 weeks off to try and get the other research done.
to everyone,
which is lovely, but I don't get anything else done. So if they're buying now, they just got to email me so I can book it in around the other stuff I'm doing.
Yeah, I know, that's fantastic.
It is an important part of the thing that we do, for sure.
It's not very often, you know, you expect when you have these tests done, it's not very often you can actually meet the people in the lab who are responsible for running the tests and interpreting the results, because usually you get that as sort of like secondary information from somebody else. So it's absolutely fantastic for them to be able to access you and your wealth of knowledge personally on a personal level as well. I know a lot of people would definitely kind of
But I think also with our test, we've got one page, which is the vet summary, and that is the master switch. So if you can achieve what's written on that one page, all the other report, everything, because the microbiome is self-regulating, everything falls in behind that one process. So as long as you can follow the instructions on that page, it's really quite simple, really.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, straightforward anyway, straightforward.
Yeah. Okay, lovely. Thank you very much. So if you could narrow it down to kind of like just one life rule with regards to keeping or helping to keep our dog's guts healthy, you know, what would that be?
I think let a dog be a dog. Don't turn him into a human. And just be fascinated by how he chooses to live his life. I think because what his microbiome is doing is making him sense his environment. And it's totally different from a human. We've kind of lost that. I mean, maybe we haven't, but I think we have at the moment. Whereas a dog, I think if you give him the opportunity, it's such a sensitive gut-brain axis link. He'll teach you a lot about what he should be eating.
Oh, that's lovely. That's like, I totally didn't expect you to say that. I totally expected you to kind of, say to include something in the diet or something like that. But I absolutely love that approach. That is, you know, that's a beautiful piece of information that hopefully pet parents can, you know, take away, because I do think it's important. Dogs are dogs at the end of the day. And again, like, you know, we come back to this whole point where we tend to view our dogs as babies of humans, and they kind of fit into our world, and we're too obsessed with having nice clean gardens that we don't like it when they go out and, you know, eat the plants and stuff. Whereas, you know, if we kind of look at them through their eyes and try and see them as a dog, then, you know, the health can just be so much better. Wow, I absolutely love that conversation, Carol. That's so exciting.
Oh, no, brilliant. Isn't it? Me too. Thank you.
I'm so excited to see what Biome for Pets has got, obviously, coming out in the next few years. I'm excited to see you speak at the expo again this year. So thank you ever so much for joining me for this chat. And thank you even more. And I think I speak for everybody else as well when I say this, for the contributions you are making to the health of our dogs, because it is, you know, it's fundamental.
thank you very much, and I'm excited for the next year. I think we're going to be doing so much more this year, so yeah, and look forward to seeing you at the Natural Dog Expo.
Yes. Okay, so anyone, for all our listeners, I'll put the links in the show notes as usual. We'll include a link to Biome for Pets, and you can have a look at the microbiome testing. And is, you know, the research that you have done, is that publicly available? Or
no, it's a little bit sensitive, because it's okay. New, we've got IP attached to it, and we're trying to patent parts of it, because I have to say it is the Wild West and people steal everything. We'd like to be genuine, but we're just not sure. We've just got to just be careful.
But if people book in with you for a consultation, obviously following their test, then they can ask you all of these questions and you can share that information with them. Okay. That's brilliant. Okay. So maybe somewhere down the line we might have a big database of Biome for Pets research available when that's all kind of
ironed out. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, that's brilliant. So I'll include the links to the Biome for Pets website, where you can get more information about everything canine microbiome and get your dog tested. So thanks ever so much, Carol, and we will speak to you soon.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to another great episode of the My Dog Made Me Do It Naturally podcast. Don't forget to check out the caption for any links discussed here today. And please, if you enjoyed the show, follow along and listen for free on your favourite podcast app. If you have any questions or would like to share your story, feel free to email me at mydogmademedoitnaturally@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Purpose of this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only and should not be substituted as advice from a veterinarian or other professional. It does not form a client relationship with me, the host, or any guest speakers, and any information is not intended to and does not diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent disease. And my guests express our own views, thoughts, and opinions as individuals, and the podcast neither endorses or opposes the views, products, or services discussed here. If your pet is ill, always seek advice from your veterinarian. I am not a veterinarian and I do not treat disease or offer medical advice.